Welcome back to The Filibuster. This is part two of our discussion on the politics of abortion in a post-Dobbs world. I am Seth Brake, and I'm joined by Hunter Baker and Sean Evans as we continue our conversation. Welcome back. Thank you. So, after Dobbs, some states have been putting on restrictions on abortion that would have been illegal under Roe. What are some examples of some of those restrictions? What states have been taking those actions?
Yeah, so what we have seen is that 17 states have banned abortion completely or almost completely. These are mostly Republican states in the South and in the Midwest. So, excuse me, the Plain states. So the states that you would expect to.
And these restrictions, have they been put on by legislatures or what happened?
Well, most of these have been done by trigger laws. So they passed laws that said if Roe was ever overturned, then this is what the law would be. And so what happened is we saw that happened in 17 states. And then I think there are three other states that have banned it, but the courts have blocked the implementation of that. And I think four have banned it after 12 to 15 weeks. So I guess that means 21 have banned, 24 have tried to in some way.
Do you think the activation of a trigger law was a surprise in some of these states? Do you think these laws were passed symbolically, or was this always the intention?
I think for the pro-life people who pushed it, they meant for it to be a trigger law. I think there were some other people who voted for it, never thinking it would take effect.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about this. I remember when we discussed this in law school and we'd be talking about what would happen if Roe were ever repealed. And I remember a professor sort of predicted something like a tripartite division among the states, that in about a third of the states it might be banned, about a third would have just laissez-faire abortion, and about a third would end up with sort of a mixed regime. That might not be a terrible prophecy.
Yeah. Well, it's up. I think it's closer to like a 50-50 instead of a tripart, because if you look at that, that's basically 26 states in the District of Columbia that basically allow abortion almost whenever.
Yes, that's interesting. Do you think that it will remain like that, or do you think that there will be some room to advance the ball down the field in some of those states?
That's a good question. I don't really have the map in front of me about which states I think that they could have a chance, but I would think that there are some states where they could put some restrictions on it, but this all depends upon political alignments and everything else. If you're a safe blue state, there's nothing that's going to happen. In fact, what we've seen in the safe blue states is they have liberalized beyond Roe, in that they have removed all restrictions, and they've even gone to state funding of abortions. And really, that funding idea was this one thing of, we know this is a controversial issue, so we won't use taxpayer money to do that. That's not even an issue now.
See, that's really interesting, because the way you just stated that looks at Roe as a more moderate position.
Yes.
And that intrigues me. I mean, so I totally understand what you're saying when you say that. But so I, as a pro-life voter, I remember Joe Manchin talked about how he wouldn't be running again, the senator from West Virginia, you know, very much sort of a centrist. And in his list of things he said that he would like to do, I think speaking in his centrist voice, he said he would like to codify Roe v. Wade, right? And so in that sense, I viewed him as he's sort of auditioning for the no labels spot in the election or something like that. And I thought to myself, there are many ways in which I might be attracted to vote for a Joe Manchin, but he's an immediate non-starter for me if he says, I want to codify Roe v. Wade.
Well, and the thing is, it's always, what do we mean by codify Roe v. Wade? And I think that means different things to different people. people. If he's from the truly centrist point of view, it's the idea of you can ban at a certain point.
The trimesters.
And there are a lot of regulations that I might support.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much a non-starter at the federal level. I know that in the House and Senate during Biden's first 2 years, they had, I believe it's the Women's Health Protection Act, which was talked about as codifying Roe v. Wade, but it was basically eliminating most every restriction that was there, and they had a majority vote in both the House and the Senate to do it. It was only the Senate filibuster which kept it from passing. But once again, there's also the idea of that's a safe vote when you know it's not going to pass. Mm. The question is, would those moderates, the few that are remaining, if they knew it would become law, would they push back and try to support more restrictions? And that's what we don't know.
Yeah, I guess it seems like there's some sort of equilibrium where moderate positions are just harder to even define in some ways.
Well, and the thing is, it's hard to be a moderate today, right, for the simple fact of our two parties have polarized, and especially at the elite level, so that there are a few people with moderate sensibilities running for office, and those that are older, and they're being replaced by more ideological people. And what you also see from an election perspective is it's hard to take a moderate position and win a nomination, because especially on the right, the biggest thing, the worst thing to be called is a rhino. You're not conservative enough. You don't quite have that same problem or the problem to the same extent in the Democratic Party, but that's still one of those issues, which is a litmus test for Democratic donors and activists, to where, I mean, we have to look, there's not a single pro-life Democrat in Washington, D.C., in the Democratic Party. In fact, Dan Lipinski was one of the last ones, and he got primaried on that issue for several years until he finally lost.
And whereas when Dr. Evans and I were young men, the governor of Pennsylvania was a pro-life Democrat, you know, major state.
Yeah, and although that his son has claimed to be a pro-life Democrat, but he actually, after Dobbs, supported the Women's Health Protection Act, which doesn't really make you very pro-life.
Yeah, and I think his voting record is probably pretty pro-choice in the end. That's my guess.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics.
Because there's a lot of unhappiness with Casey from...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about the trigger laws and the legislative actions and things like that, but there's a whole other class of attempts to legislate on this issue, and those come from ballot measures and referendums. So what's been going on with those?
Well, there's a couple things going on. There are some blue states like California and Vermont, which after Dobbs explicitly put it in their constitution. Mm. So you've had some blue states do that, and I believe it is Maryland and New York are doing that. Then you've had like swing states like Michigan, to where they just passed in this most recent election, basically providing for the right to abortion. I think Vermont has done the same thing. But what you have seen in Ohio in this last election, a referendum basically guaranteed the right to abortion. And then you've seen in Louisiana, Kansas, and Kentucky, they tried to pass a constitutional amendment that said nothing in the state constitution protects a right to abortion, and it only passed in Louisiana. And then you've seen things like in Montana, that they wanted to provide medical care for infants born alive, and that even failed. Mm. And I figured that's one of those things to where, okay, that would be an easy thing to win, but it failed there. But we have to remember the West is more libertarian than they are social conservative. But you thought that would have been something that would be easier to pass.
So one thing that's really, I'm gonna try to find the pony in the room full of excrement. So the results have been very disheartening for pro-lifers in terms of these referenda and ballot measures, things on in the various states. But I do want to say this. I hope that this experience leads to a greater faith in federalism on the part of people in the various states. In other words, so let's say you're a hardcore pro-choice type. You observe what has happened in the wake of Dobbs. You thought it was going to be the absolute end of the world. You know, you imagined the secret pro-life police going and kidnapping women from their homes and forcing them to have babies. I'm trying to remember what that famous, what's the utopia, Margaret Atwood, dystopia?
The Handmaid's Tale,
right? Yes, the Handmaid's Tale immediately takes effect, you know. Instead, you see that that actually people who have that point of view have been very effective democratically and sort of achieving their aims. And so as much as I want to see a pro-life regime sort of in all 50 states, I would like us to go back to being a country that would consider more of these things on a state-by-state basis, rather than looking to the Supreme Court to entirely remove an issue from democratic consideration. So yeah, that will be my small silver lining.
Yeah, well, and I'm a big federalism fan too, because I think the idea also is if you're the minority in a state, you can't really go attacking the other side if you want to win, that it would lead to more interactions, a change in the discourse, because you would have to try to persuade more people to your position. And so I think that's the hope of what federalism is in terms of reducing the temperature of our culture wars. Unfortunately, fat chance is my fear, because what we have seen is the nationalization of the culture wars, no matter what has gone on. Because it used to be when the left lost things in states, they would go to the courts and try to get the courts to overturn those state bans, because under the state's police power, they have always had the power to regulate on moral issues. So instead, they take it into court saying, but this is a violation of rights on some level. But my fear is that the next time the Democrats take control of Congress and the presidency, that they're going to eliminate the filibuster. I think there's been pressure to do that. And I think Republicans have done some things which have increased the chance that it will be nuked, like Tommy Tuberville's blanket hold on all military promotions is leading many people saying, this is just silly. Why would we a blanket ban on abortions? Because he wants the Defense Department to change its policy on allowing service members to get abortion.
Paying for it, right? I think it had to do with whether the military would pay for you to travel. Right.
Yeah, to travel for it. And I think the fact that he has put a hold on hundreds, there are many of the moderate Democrats saying this is silly, we have to reform these, and if they'll get rid of that, the Democrats are very clear that they want to pass a national law to overturn all of these state laws.
Yeah, and this is a thing that may seem like a small thing to a lot of people, but I actually am happy right now about the fact that I can choose to live in a state that is not sanctioning what I believe to be the unjust taking of an innocent life. That means something to me. Mm-hmm. And it would be a significant loss were Congress to take that in hand and remove that.
Yeah, I understand, but from what I see with the polarization, the power of the elites, I think it's clear they're headed in that direction. I mean, they even talked about in Biden's first 2 years that this is a reason to even provide an exception to the filibuster, the idea of protecting fundamental rights.
Do you think that they could end up overplaying their hand that way? I mean, you know, so they've been able to use the issue effectively at the state level. But it almost seems like if they keep pushing hard at the national level, that they could, you know, kind of create a pro-life backlash or re-energize the pro-life forces.
Yeah. I think what we see is that every cultural move results in a backlash. So the left does something, there's a backlash that favors the right does something, there's a corresponding backlash. So I would think that if they passed basically a law that said you can have abortion up until including the third trimester, I think that would lead to a backlash, because while polling has changed in the sense of there are now more people who are pro-choice who define it as the issue when it used to be pro-life, I think if you look at polling overall, the average American voter wants there to be an option but wants it to be heavily regulated. And so I think on some level, what we might have is eventually in 10, 20 years from now, is the pre-Dobbs legislative consensus, but it's just now legislated instead of judicially imposed.
So that would be an act of Congress.
Yes.
And yeah. So is that just going to raise the temperature of federal of the federal level of politics then?
How can you raise it even more than it already
is? Not in any good ways.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, I think it's the Newton's law. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And I think what you would see happen is the left would pass their maximal bill. The Republicans would eventually get in. I think they would realize they could not ban everything. And I think there'd probably be some political pressure and other things that would move them to eventually putting restrictions on it. And I think they'd try to put as many restrictions as possible. And I think they could say a ban after a certain point. I know there's all this discussion about what it should be, but I think if you look at this, people will look at the Glenn Youngkin idea that he said ban after 15 weeks with exceptions for rape and incest. And people say, oh, the Republicans didn't, they lost the House, did not take the state Senate. But if you actually look at what happened there, the Republicans won every Dem plus 9 district and lower. If you have something that wins plus 9 on the other side, that seems to me that that's a winning issue for you. I think the GOP is just going to have to start thinking about a ban at this point with exceptions. And I think if they did that, they could then potentially change the way that the pro-life movement is viewed, and they might have a few more victories.
Yeah, and I just think there's a certain amount of cognitive dissonance. It is very strange to live in a culture where people may have their ultrasound of their expected baby on the refrigerator, right? You know, held up with a magnet, or posting it on social media as soon as they know they're pregnant, and yet simultaneously holding the position that living being in that image can legally be killed or destroyed. I mean, that's, you know, so I mean, you know, I don't think that it's an issue that's ever going to go away.
Correct.
It has to be discussed. It has to be thought about.
So if our one silver lining was that things might be going to the federal level, but we think that the national trends are going to pull them toward to the state level, and the national trend might pull it to the federal level. Does that mean there is no silver lining here and it's just going to get worse? I mean,
Dr. Evans is removing my hope for the silver lining. Also,
look, it's going to be difficult for many years, but I think there is something about the democratic process being involved, because I think when the courts get involved, it's black and white, a right, or you're taking away a right. I think when you're engaged in legislative deliberation, the goal is to build allies. You have to change the way you talk and everything else. You have to find areas of common ground. And I think on some level that we are going to finally reach a position where the people have spoken through their elected representatives. And I think eventually we're going to say it's time to choose another topic to talk about. The question is, what status quo are they going to finally arrive at?
You know, something else that it seems to me like this issue has transformed American politics in significant ways, right? I mean, so for example, it has made American politics much more religion inflected than it otherwise would be. It has mobilized people who otherwise would not have been mobilized. You know, it changed our entire politics of the Supreme Court. You know, so to me, one of the positive things that could happen if we have more of a federalism sort of based approach to this is that maybe the Supreme Court could return to being a more normal sort of a body, right? And, yeah. and that we deal with the nominations in a more normal way.
Well, I think this is directly related to how well Congress can work as an institution. Part of the reason why the courts have played such a prominent role on all these major issues for the past few decades is because Congress hasn't been doing its job, in part because they can't, and in terms of the differences they have, but part of it because they didn't want to. I think from everything I see, what the Democrats are talking about is next time they have the trifecta, they're going to make some major changes to how Congress is operated in terms of the filibuster. I think they're going to try to add states, which would, in their view, lead to more Democratic representation. You look at kind of their idea of voting rights laws and other political reforms. If you look at how, for example, their law to take away partisan gerrymandering, they're creating neutral criteria which would favor the Democratic Party. So they're making all these plans to make sure that government can actually try to resolve these type issues. Now, I think it'll be a lot more difficult to actually achieve what they want if they do this. Will it be easier for them to do things? Yes. But will they get everything they want? I don't think so, because there's too many people on the left who thinks that the public agrees with them on everything and the public doesn't agree with them on everything. And so, once again, they may win this first election, but there will be an election and there will be a pushback and there will eventually be some kind of national consensus. But the other option could the Supreme Court actually impose a type of federalism on these type of issues and everything else, saying it's not a federal responsibility, it's something that belongs to states. But then once again, that makes the Supreme Court once again the focus of all our attention and potentially leads the left to say we actually need to change the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and I just want to add that, you know, so you kind of started by blaming the inability of Congress or Congress's weakness. I do want to say, when it comes to abortion and with regard to marriage, instead you have the Supreme Court leaping in to take an issue out, right? I mean, with abortion, you know, you have a couple of things happen. The New York legislature legalizes abortion, you know, a couple of other things. Wah-boom, you know, the Supreme Court leaps in and freezes the issue in amber, right? And the same thing has happened with marriage. Now, you know, that might have unfolded differently. I'm not sure. But I think that we're better off if the Supreme Court is far more restrained in the way that it acts.
Yeah, and I agree wholeheartedly on that. I was just saying the main reason they were being more active is because the political branches weren't dealing with the issues.
Now, this has been mostly about the federal level. If we go back and look at the states again, if we do have this world where we have some states with very restrictive or abortion bans, then we have other states that are extremely open, you know, that's a pretty significant difference. Is that going to change the way the states interact and the people in those states interact? Is that going to change travel and business and things like that?
It has a big impact on business. Corporations, Chamber of Commerce, corporations want one single regime of law.
Right.
Right. It's the reason we have a uniform commercial code that is then promulgated out to all the states is because the corporations who operate across the nation, and in fact across countries, they don't want a diversity of laws, right? You know, they want, you know, we don't really care what the rules are. I mean, they do, but by and large, they're just like, just give us one uniform set of rules. And they don't like the fact that they're going to have to deal with where in some states, you know, they may have employees who will want rights to abortion included in the insurance package or whatever else. And in other states, their employees won't have access to that. I mean, you know, anything that is different, they don't like. Same thing with something like marriage, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and so the corporations, I think, are always going to be kind of pushing for, depending on how you see it, either the highest or the lowest common denominator.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure it's going to lead to conflict between states and everything, because the idea is people have boycotts, they do everything, but boycotts get a lot of attention and they fade away. So, for example, you had states said, oh, we won't support conference travel to states that have these kinds of laws and like that. And then, of course, they always provide exceptions to that, and they had so many exceptions that it wasn't a very effective ban. And so I think California actually repealed their ban on sending state employees to conferences in like Georgia, Tennessee, right, and things because of their voting laws, abortion laws, or things like that. I think where it comes in is we'll see more ideas about can states punish people for traveling to a to a pro-choice state to have abortions, or regulating the mailing of abortion drugs, in which case I think states are trying to do those kinds of things. And I think from a constitutional perspective, the ability to prevent someone from traveling out of state is very constitutionally suspect. And for a state to control what is mailed within its state is very constitutionally suspect. I expect those laws to be passed, but I expect them to be struck down very quickly. And so eventually, I think there won't be much conflict between states and citizens of states.
Are there any other issues that cause states to react like that against each other, even if symbolically? It seems like an unusual thing to have states even pretending to sanction each other.
Labor, I mean, well, just not necessarily sanctioning each other, but I'm just thinking about that probably at certain points in American history, states have made much of being, say, right to work versus something else. But I've never heard of them trying to prevent you from traveling to another state or something like that. Doing business with a right to work state,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and even with that, is a business saying, I'm not going to settle in Tennessee, even though they're giving us all these great tax breaks because of their view, because of a law on abortion. I'm not quite sure that these kind of boycotts and things are really all that effective on the left and right.
So one thing that really gets to me is, so you just pointed out that, you know, California had this rule, we're not going to pay for travel to the state of Georgia because they passed a new election law or something like that. To me, it seems trivial and silly that states would do something like that, right? I mean, what does that communicate to us about how important these office holders view symbolism?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I was about to say. You know, this is all about symbolic politics, because the idea about symbolic politics is you make a statement, it makes people happy, it makes other people mad, but it really doesn't do anything at all. And the fact that our politics is so much symbolic these days is part of what's wrong with our nation.
So do we expect these issues to affect the 2024 election?
I think that Donald Trump is going to be in trouble. I mean, there lots of people are talking about Donald Trump is more popular than ever. He has a tremendous chance to win. From my perspective, he talks down the abortion issue, right? He acts as though he regrets Dobbs. I think he's going to end up causing a lot more people to stay home if he keeps doing that. So, you know, I think that that could hurt him pretty significantly. Yeah.
I think as long as the left thinks it's something that will gain them votes, they're going to do so. I mean, part of this, I also wonder how much of this is an echo chamber in the sense of the left says abortion's the number one issue, and when they keep on saying that, that's a signal to liberal voters, oh, abortion's a major motivating issue. So there's kind of that chicken and the egg thing. Will this play a role? I think so. You see that because they're going to make a big deal of it. I think on the national level, I'm guessing Trump is great at mobilizing people to vote, both for him and against him. And I think people will turn out because of their disgust or love of him. I think the key is what kind of role does it have on the Senate and House races. Part of the idea is what we have seen is when abortion is on the ballot, removing restrictions on it is popular. But what we also see in those same states where they say, oh, we don't want to regulate abortion, pro-life people win by overwhelming margins. So it's about how well can the candidates frame the election in a way that is as positive for them as they can.
Well, we are starting to run out of time here, but I want to, do we have any closing remarks or thoughts on this before I yield back the remainder of my time?
All I'm going to say is that I would really like this thing to have some time to play out in terms of federalism. I just would really like to see issues of this type sort of help us redevelop our capacity to deal with some of these highly charged issues in a democratic way and in a more state-by-state and localized fashion.
Yeah, I will echo that. And I would also say I think the pro-life movement has to expand its idea of pro-life beyond the womb. I know that they do this in the sense of the crisis pregnancy centers and things like that. But I think in terms of building coalitions, changing the way people view you, you have to talk about not just abortion, adoption. I think things like child care, education, and other kinds of things. The idea of pro-life for the whole life is something that I think could be a winning issue for them and help them grow their support.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for your time. And with that, I yield back the remainder of my time. Thank you.